Chapter 35. With the Choadun Call. Rand rode across the wide stone bridge leading north from the Camlin Gate without looking back. The sun was a pale golden ball just risen above the horizon in a cloudless sky, but the air was cold enough to mist his breath, and the lake winds made his cloak fly about. He did not feel the chill, though, except as something distant and not really connected to him. He was colder than any winter could be. The guards who had come to take him out of the cell the night before had been surprised to find him wearing a small smile. He wore it still, a slight curve of his mouth. Nynaeve had healed his bruises using the last of the Sayadar in her belt, yet the helmeted officer who came into the road at the foot of the bridge, a stocky man with blunt features, gave a start at the sight of him, as though his face was still swollen and purple. Cadswain leaned from her saddle to speak a few quiet words and hand the officer a folded paper. He frowned at her and began to read, then jerked his head up to stare in amazement at the men and women waiting patiently on their horses behind her. Starting again at the top of the page, he read, moving his lips silently, as if he wanted to be sure of every word, and small wonder. Signed and sealed by all 13 councils, the order said that there was to be no checking of peace bonds, no search of the pack horses. This party's names were to be blotted out completely in the record books, and the order itself burned. They had never come to Farmatting. No Aes Sedai, no Atha An Meer, none of them.
"It's over, Rand," Min said gently, moving her sturdy brown mare nearer to his gray gelding,
though she already stayed as close to him as Nynaeve did to Lan. Lan's bruises and a broken arm had been healed before she had attended to Rand. Min's face reflected the worry flowing through the bond. Letting her cloak go on the wind, she patted his arm.
"You don't have to think about it anymore."
"I'm grateful to Farmatting, Min." His voice was emotionless, distant, as it had been when he seized Sayadin in the early days. He would have warmed it for her, but that seemed beyond him. "I really did find what I needed here." If a sword had memory, it might be grateful to the forge fire, but never fond of it. When they were waved through, he cantered the gray up the hard-packed dirt road and into the hills, and he did not so much as glance back until trees hid any sight of the city. The road climbed and wound through forested winter hills, where only pine and leatherleaf showed green, and most branches were stark and gray. And suddenly the source was there again, seemingly just beyond the corner of his eye. It pulsed and beckoned and filled him with hunger like starvation. Without thought, he reached out and filled the emptiness in himself with Sayadin, an avalanche of fire, a storm of ice, all larded with the filthy taint that made the larger wound in his side pulse. He swayed in the saddle as his head spun and his stomach clenched, even as he fought to ride the avalanche that tried to sear his mind, to soar on the storm that tried to scour his soul. There was no forgiveness or pity in the male half of the power. A man fought it or died. He could feel the three Ashaman behind him filling themselves too, drinking at Sayadin like men just out of the waste who had found water. In his head, Luce Theron sighed with relief. Min reined her mount so close to him that their legs touched.
"Are you all right?"
she said worriedly.
"You look ill."
"I'm as well as rainwater," he told her, and the lie was not just about his belly. He was steel, and to his surprise, still not hard enough. He had intended sending her to Camlin with Olivia to protect her. If the golden-haired woman was going to help him die, he had to be able to trust her. He had planned his words, but looking into Min's dark eyes, he was not hard enough to make his tongue form them. Turning the gray in among the bare-branched trees, he spoke to Cadswain over his shoulder. "This is the place." She followed him, of course. They all did. Arena had barely let him out of her sight long enough to sleep a few hours last night. He would have left her behind, but on that subject, Cadswain had given him her first advice.
You made a bargain with them, boy, the same as signing a treaty, or giving your word. Keep it or tell them it's broken, otherwise you are just a thief." Blunt, to the point, and in tones that left no doubt as to her opinion of thieves. He had never promised to follow her counsel, but she was too reluctant about being his advisor at all for him to risk driving her away this soon, so the Wave Mistress and the two other sea folk rode with Olivia, ahead of Varen and the other five Aes Sedai who had sworn to him, and the four who were Cadswain's companions. She would as soon leave him as them, he was certain, maybe sooner. To other eyes than his, nothing distinguished the place where he had dug before going into Farmadding. To his eyes, a thin shaft that shone like a lantern rose through the damp mulch on the forest floor. Even another man who could channel could have walked through that shaft without knowing it was there. He did not bother to dismount. Using flows of air, he ripped aside the layer of rotting leaves and twigs and shoveled away damp earth until he uncovered a long, narrow bundle tied with leather cords. Clods of dirt clung to the wrapping cloth as he floated Kalendor to his hand. He had not dared carry that to Farmadding. Without a scabbard, he would have had to leave it at the bridge fortress, a dangerous flag waiting to announce his presence. It was unlikely there was another sword made of crystal to be found in the world, and too many people knew that the Dragon Reborn had one. And leaving it here, he had still ended up in a dark, cramped stone box under the... No. That was done and over. Over. Luce Theron panted in the shadows of his mind. Thrusting Kalendor under his saddle girth, he reined the gray around to face the others. The horses held their tails tight against the wind, but now and then one stamped a foot or tossed its head, impatient to be moving again after so long in the stable. The leather scrip that hung from Nynaeve's shoulder looked incongruous with all the begemmed Tirangrial she wore. Now that the time was near, she was stroking the bulging scrip, apparently without realizing what she was doing. She was trying to hide her fear, but her chin trembled. Cadswain was looking at him impassively. Her cowl had fallen down her back, and sometimes a gust stronger than most swayed the golden fish and birds, stars and moons, dangling from her bun. "I'm going to remove the taint from the male half of the source," he announced. The three Ashaman, now in plain dark coats and cloaks like the other warders, exchanged excited glances, but a ripple passed through the Aes Sedai. Nisun let out a gasp that seemed too large for the slender, bird-like sister. Cadswain's expression never altered. "With what?" she said, raising a skeptical eyebrow at the bundle beneath his leg. "With the Toadan Kaal," he replied. That name was another gift from Luz Theron, resting in Rand's head as if it had always been there. "You know them as immense statues, Sa Angreal, one buried in Kyrian, the other on Tremelking." Arena's head jerked, making the golden medallions on her nose chain click together at the mention of the Seafolk Island. "They're too big to be moved with any ease, but I have a pair of Tirangrial called access keys. Using those, the Chordan Kaal can be tapped from anywhere in the world."
"Dangerous," Luz Theron moaned. "Madness."
Rand ignored him. For the moment, only Cadswain mattered. Her bay flicked one black ear, and at that he seemed more excitable than his rider.
"One of those Sa Angreal is made for a woman," she said coolly. "Who do you propose to use that? Or do these keys allow you to draw on both yourself?"
"Nynaeve will link with me." He trusted Nynaeve to link with, but no one else. She was Aes Sedai, but she had been the wisdom of Emmons Field. He had to trust her. She smiled at him and nodded firmly, her chin no longer trembling. "Don't try to stop me, Cadswain." She said nothing, only studied him, dark eyes weighing and measuring.
"Forgive me, Cadswain.
Kumira broke into the silence, heeling her dapple forward.
Young man, have you considered the possibility of failure? Have you considered the consequences of failure?
I must ask the same question,
Nassoon said sharply. She sat very straight in her saddle, and her dark eyes met Rand's gaze levelly.
By everything I have read, the attempt to use those Sa'angreal may result in disaster. Together, they might be strong enough to crack the world like an egg.
Like an egg, Luz Theron agreed.
They were never tested, never tried. This is insane, he shrieked. You are mad, mad!
The last I heard, Rand told the sisters, one Ashaman in 50 had gone mad and had to be put down like a rabid dog. More will have by now. There is a risk to doing this, but it's all maybe and might. If I don't try, the certainty is that more and more men will go mad, maybe scores, maybe all of us. And sooner or later it will be too many to be killed easily. Will you enjoy waiting for the last battle with 100 rabid Ashaman wandering about? Or 200? Or 5? And maybe me, one of them? How long will the world survive that? He spoke to the two Browns, but it was Cadswain, who he watched. Her almost black eyes never left him. He needed to keep her with him, but if she tried to talk him out of it, he would reject her advice no matter the consequences. If she tried to stop him, Saidin raged inside him.
Will you do the deed here? She asked.
In Shadda Logoth, he told her, and she nodded.
A fitting place, she said, if we are to risk destroying the world.
Luz Theron screamed, a dwindling howl that echoed inside Rand's skull as the voice fled into the dark depths. There was nowhere to hide, though, no safe place. The gateway he wove did not open into the ruined city of Shadda Logoth itself, but to a thinly wooded, uneven hilltop a few miles to the north, where the horse hooves rang on sparse, stony soil that had stunted the leafless trees, and ragged patches of snow covered the ground. As Rand dismounted, his eye was caught by distant glimpses of the place once called Aridhol, showing above the trees, towers that ended abruptly in jagged stone, and white onion-shaped domes that could have sheltered a village had they been whole. He did not look for long. Despite the clear morning sky, those pale domes failed to gleam as they should, as if something cast a shadow over the sprawling ruin. Even at this distance from the city, the second never-healing wound in his side had begun to throb faintly. The slash given by Padan Fane's dagger, the dagger that had come from Shadda Logoth, did not beat together with the pulsing of the larger wound it cut across, but rather against it, alternating. Cadswain took charge, issuing brisk commands, as might have been expected. One way or another, Aes Sedai always did, given half a chance, and Rand did not try to stop her. Lan and Nethan and Basane rode down into the forest to scout, and the other warders hurried to fasten the horses to low branches out of the way. Min stood up in her stirrups and pulled Rand's head to where she could kiss his eyes. Without speaking a word, she went to join the men with the horses. The bond surged with her love for him, with confidence and a trust so complete that he stared after her in amazement. Eben came to take Rand's mount, grinning from ear to ear. Together with his nose, those ears still seemed to make up half his face, but he was a slender youth rather than gawky now.
"It will be wonderful, channeling without the taint, my lord dragon," he said excitedly.
Rand thought Eben might be as much as 17, but he sounded younger.
"That always makes me want to empty my belly, if I think on it."
He trotted away with the gray, still grinning. The power roared in Rand, and the filth tarnishing the pure life of Saidin seeped into him, rank runnels that would bring madness and death. Cadswain gathered the Aes Sedai around her, and Olivia and the Seafolk Windfinder, too. Arena grumbled loudly about being excluded until a finger pointed by Cadswain sent her stalking across the hilltop. Moad, in his odd blue quilted coat, sat Arena down on an outcrop and talked soothingly, though sometimes his eyes went to the surrounding trees, and then he slid a hand along the long ivory hilt of his sword. Jahar appeared from the direction of the horses, stripping the cloth wrappings from Kalendor. The crystal sword, with its long clear hilt and slightly curving blade, sparkled in the pale sunlight. At an imperious gesture from Maerys, he quickened his step to join her. Dahmer was in that group too, and Eben. Cadswain had not asked to use Kalendor. That could pass. For now, it could.
That woman could try a stone's patience, Nynaeve muttered, striding up to Rand.
With one hand she held the script's strap firmly on her shoulder, while the other was just as firmly around the thick braid hanging from her cowl.
To the pit of doom with her, that's what I say. Are you sure Min couldn't be wrong just this once? Well, I suppose not. But still, will you stop smiling like that? You'd make a cat nervous.
We might as well begin, he told her, and she blinked.
Shouldn't we wait on Cadswain?
No one would suspect she had been complaining about the Aes Sedai a moment earlier. If anything, she sounded anxious not to upset her.
She will do what she will do, Nynaeve. With your help, I will do what I must.
Still, she hesitated, clutching the script to her chest and casting worried glances in the direction of the women gathered around Cadswain. Olivia left that group and hurried toward them across the uneven ground, holding her cloak closed with both hands.
Cadswain says I must have the Tirangreal, Nynaeve, she said in the soft Seanchan drawl. Now don't argue. There isn't time. Besides, they are no good to you if you're going to be linked to him.
This time the look Nynaeve directed toward the women around Cadswain was near murderous, but she stripped off rings and bracelets, muttering under her breath, and handed the jeweled belt and necklace to Olivia as well. After a moment, she sighed and unfastened the peculiar bracelet connected to finger rings by flat chains.
You might as well take this, too. I don't suppose I need an Angreal if I'm going to be using the most powerful Sa-Angreal ever made. But I want them all back, understand? She finished fiercely. I am not a thief, the hawk-eyed woman told her primly, slipping the four rings over the fingers of her left hand.
Strangely, the Angreal that fitted Nynaeve so well fit on her longer hand just as easily. The two women both stared at the thing. It came to him then that neither of them acknowledged any possibility that he might fail here. He wished he could be as certain. What had to be done, though.
Are you going to wait all day, Rand?
Nynaeve asked when Olivia set off back to Cadswain, even more quickly than she had come. Smoothing her cloak under her, Nynaeve sat down on an upthrust gray stone the size of a small bench, pulled the script onto her lap, and flipped back the leather flap. Rand folded himself to the ground cross-legged in front of her as she produced the two access keys, smooth white statues a foot tall, each holding a clear sphere in one upraised hand. The figure of a bearded man in robes she handed to him. That of a robed woman she set on the ground at her feet. The faces on those figures were serene and strong and wise with years.
You must put yourself right on the edge of embracing the source, she told him, smoothing her skirts that did not need smoothing. Then I can link with you.
With a sigh, Rand put down the bearded man and released Sayadin. Raging fire and cold vanished, and the grease-slick vileness of the taint, and with them, life seemed to dwindle too, turning the world pale and drab. He placed his hands on the ground beside him against the sickness that would strike when he took hold of the source again, but a different dizziness suddenly spun his head. For a heartbeat, a vague face filled his eyes, blotting out Nynaeve, a man's face, almost recognizable. Light if that ever happened while he was actually grabbing hold of Sayadin. Nynaeve bent toward him, concern on her face. "Now," he said, and reached for the source through the bearded man. reached, but did not seize it. He hung on the brink, wanting to howl with the agony as flickering flames seemed to broil him even while shrieking winds blasted particles of frozen sand across his skin. Watching Nynaeve take a quick breath, he knew it lasted only an instant, yet it seemed he endured for hours before Syedene flowed through him, all the molten fury and icy tumbling, all the foulness, and he could not control a hair-thin thread. He could see the flow from him into Nynaeve, to feel it seething through him, feel the treacherous tides and shifting ground that could destroy him in a heartbeat, to feel that without being able to fight or control was an agony in itself. He was aware of her, he realized suddenly, in much the same way he was aware of Min. But all he could think of was Syedene, flooding through him uncontrolled. She drew a shuddering breath.
"How can you stand that?" she said hoarsely. "All chaos and rage and death. Light. Now you must try as hard as you can to control the flows, while I..."
Desperate to gain his balance in that never-ending war with Syedene, he did as she said, and she yelped and jumped.
"You were supposed to wait until I..."
she began in angry tones, then went on in a merely irritated voice.
"Well, at least I'm rid of it. What are you so wide-eyed about? I'm the one had her skin yanked off."
"Sayadar," he murmured in wonder. "It was so different." Alongside the turmoil of Syedene, Sayadar was a tranquil river flowing smoothly. He dipped into that river, and suddenly he was struggling against currents that tried to pull him further in, swirling whirlpools that tried to yank him under. The harder he struggled, the stronger the shifting fluxes grew. Only an instant since he had tried to control Syedar, and already he felt as if he was drowning in it, being swept away into eternity. Nynaeve had warned him what he must do, but it seemed so foreign he had not truly believed until now. With an effort, he forced himself to stop fighting the currents, and as quickly as that, the river was tranquil once more. That was the first difficulty, to fight Syedene while surrendering to Syedar. The first difficulty and the first key to what he had to do. The male and female halves of the true source were alike and unalike, attracting and repelling, fighting against each other even as they worked together to drive the wheel of time. The taint on the male half had its opposite twin, too. The wound given him by Ishamael throbbed in time with the taint, while the other, from Fane's blade, beat counterpoint in time with the evil that had killed Aradhal. Awkwardly forcing himself to work gently, to use the unfamiliar Sayadar's own immense strength to guide it as he wanted, he wove a conduit that touched the male half of the source at one end and the distantly seen city at the other. The conduit had to be of untainted Sayadar. If this worked as he hoped, a tube of Syedene might shatter when the taint began to leach out of it. He thought of it as a tube, at least, though it was not. The weave did not form at all as he expected it to. As if Sayadar had a mind of its own, the weave took on convolutions and spirals that made him think of a flower. There was nothing to see, no grand weaves seeping down from the sky. The source lay at the heart of creation. The source was everywhere, even in Shadarlogoth. The conduit covered distance beyond his imagining and had no length at all. It had to be a conduit, no matter its appearance. If it was not... Drawing on Syedene, fighting it, mastering it in the deadly dance he knew so well, he forced it into the flowery weave of Sayadar. And it flowed through. Syedene and Sayadar, like and unlike, could not mix. The flow of Syedene squeezed in on itself, away from the surrounding Sayadar, and the Sayadar pushed it from all sides, compressing it further, making it flow faster. Pure Syedene, pure except for the taint, touched Shadarlogoth. Rand frowned. Had he been wrong? Nothing was happening. Except... The wounds in his side seemed to be throbbing faster. Amid the firestorm and icy fury of Saiyadin, it seemed that the foulness stirred and shifted. Just a slight movement that might have escaped notice had he not been straining to find anything. A slight stirring in the midst of chaos, but all in the same direction. "Go on," Nynaeve urged. Her eyes were bright, as though just having Sayadar flow in her was enough for joy. He drew more deeply on both halves of the source, strengthening the conduit as he forced more of Saiyadin into it. Drew on the power until nothing he did would bring more. He wanted to shout at how much was flowing into him, so much that it seemed he did not exist anymore. Only the one power. He heard Nynaeve groan, but the murderous struggle with Saiyadin consumed him.
Fingering the great serpent ring on her left forefinger, Elza stared at the man she had sworn to serve. He sat on the ground, grim-faced, staring straight ahead as if he could not see the wilder Nynaeve sitting right in front of him, glowing like the sun. Perhaps he could not. She could feel Sayadar sweeping through Nynaeve in torrents undreamed of. All the sisters of the tower combined could have wielded only a fraction of that ocean. She envied the wilder that, and at the same time she thought she might have gone mad from the sheer joy of it. Despite the cold, there were beads of sweat on Nynaeve's face. Her lips were parted, and her wide eyes stared rapturously beyond the dragon reborn. "It will begin soon, I fear," Cadswain announced. Turning away from the seated pair, the gray-haired sister planted her hands on her hips and swept a piercing gaze across the hilltop. "They'll be feeling that in Tar Valon, and maybe on the other side of the world. Everyone to your places." "Come, Elza," Maurice said, the light of Sayadar suddenly around her. Elza allowed herself to be drawn into a link with the stern-faced sister, but she flinched when Maurice added her Ashaman warder to the circle. He was darkly beautiful, but the crystal sword in his hands shone with a faint light, and she could feel the incredible seething tumult that must be Saiyadin. Even though Maurice was controlling the flows, the vileness of Saiyadin turned Elza's stomach. It was a midden heap, rotting in a sweltering summer. The other green was a lovely woman in spite of her sternness, but her mouth thinned, as if she, too, were struggling not to vomit. All around the hilltop the circles were forming, Serene and Kareel linked with the old man Flynn, and Nasuna, Beldine, and Daigyan with the boy Hopwill. Varen and Kumira even made a circle with the sea folk Wilder. She was actually quite strong, and everyone had to be used. As soon as each of those circles formed, it moved off the hilltop, each vanishing among the trees in a different direction. Olivia, the very peculiar Wilder who seemed to have no other name, strode off north, cloak flapping behind her, surrounded by the glow of the power. A very troubling woman with those tiny lines around her eyes and incredibly strong. Elza would have given a great deal to have her hands on those Turangreal the woman wore. Olivia and the three circles would provide an encircling defense, if it were needed, but the greatest need lay right there on the hilltop. The dragon reborn must be protected at all costs. That job Cadswain had taken on herself, of course, but Maurice's circle would remain there, too. Cadswain must have had an Angreal of her own, from the amount of Sayadar she was drawing, more than Elsa and Maurice combined, yet even that paled beside the power that flowed through Kalandor. Elza glanced toward the dragon reborn and drew a deep breath. "Maurice, I know I shouldn't ask, but may I meld the flows?" She expected to have to plead, but the taller woman hesitated only a moment before nodding and passing control to her. Almost immediately, Maurice's mouth softened, though it could never be called soft. Fire and ice and filth welled up in Elza, and she shuddered. Whatever the cost, the dragon reborn had to reach the last battle. Whatever the cost.
Riding his cart down the snowy road to Tremontsian, Barmelin wondered whether old Maglin, at the Nine Rings, would pay what he wanted for the plum brandy in the cart behind him. He was not sanguine. She was tight with silver, Maglin was. The brandy was not very good, and this late in the winter she might be willing to wait until spring to get better. Suddenly, he realized that the day seemed very bright, almost like summer noon instead of a winter morning. Strangest of all, the glow seemed to be coming from the huge pit beside the road where workmen from the city had been digging away until the previous year. There was supposed to be a monstrous statue down there, but he had never been interested enough to actually look for himself. Now, almost against his will, he reined in his stout mare and climbed down into the snow to trudge to the brink of the pit. It was 100 paces deep and 10 times as far across, and he had to put his hands in front of his face against the blinding glare that came from the bottom. Squinting through his fingers, he could make out a glowing ball, like a second sun. Abruptly, it came to him that this must be the One Power. With a strangled yell, he lumbered back through the snow to his cart and scrambled up, flailing Nisa with the reins to get her moving even as he was trying to jerk her head around to head back to his farm. He was going to stay in his own house and drink that brandy himself. All of it.
Strolling lost in thought, Timna barely saw the fallow fields that covered all the hillsides but one around her. Trimalking was a large island, and this far from the sea, the wind carried no hint of salt. Yet it was the Athaan Mier that troubled her. They refused the waterway, yet Timna was one of the guides chosen to protect them from themselves, if possible. That was very difficult now, with them all in an uproar over this Koromor of theirs. Very few remained on the island. Even the governors, always fretting at being away from the sea as the Athaan Mier did, had set sail to search for him in any craft they could find. Suddenly the one unplowed hill caught her eye. A great stone hand stuck out of the ground, clasping a clear sphere as large as a house, and that sphere was shining like a glorious summer sun. All thoughts of the Athaan Mier gone, Timna gathered her cloak and sat down on the ground, smiling to think that she might see the fulfillment of prophecy and the end of illusion.
"If you truly are one of the chosen, I will serve you," the bearded man in front of Sindane said doubtfully, but she did not hear what else he had to say. She could feel it. That much of Sidar being drawn to one spot was a beacon that any woman in the world who could channel would feel and locate. So he had found a woman to use the other access key. She would have faced the great lord, faced the creator, with him. She would have shared the power with him, let him rule the world at her side. And he had spurned her love. Spurned her! The fool babbling at her was an important man, as such things were accounted here and now, but she did not have time to make certain of his trustworthiness, and without that she could not leave him to babble, not when she could feel Muradin's hand caressing the Khor Suvra that held her soul. A razor-thin flow of air sliced the fellow's beard in two as it took off his head. Another flow shoved the body backward, so the blood fountaining from the stub of his neck did not spot her dress. Before body or head hit the stone floor, she had spun her gateway, a beacon she could point to, beckoning her. As she stepped into rolling forest where scattered carpets of snow littered the ground beneath stark branches, bare save for the thick ropes of drooping brown vines, she wondered where the beacon had drawn her. It did not matter. South of her, that beacon shone, enough Sidar to lay waste to a continent in one blow. He would be there, him and whoever the woman was he had betrayed her with. Carefully she drew on the power to spin a web for his death. Lightning such as Cadswain had never seen streaked down from the cloudless sky. Not jagged bolts, but lances of silver blue that struck at the hilltop where she stood, and struck instead the inverted shield she had woven, erupting with a deafening roar 50 feet above her head. Even within the shield the air crackled, and her hair stirred and lifted. Without the aid of the Angreal that looked a little like a shrike dangling from her bun, she would not have been able to hold the shield up. A second golden bird, a swallow, hung from her hand by its thin chain. "There," she said, pointing in the direction it seemed to be flying. A pity she could not say how far away the power had been channeled, or whether by a man or a woman, but the direction would have to do. She hoped there would be no mishaps. Her people were out there, too. If the warning came with an attack, though, there could not be much doubt. As soon as the single word left her mouth, a fountain of flame erupted in the forest to the north, and then another and another, a staggering line racing northward.
Kalandor shone like a flame in young Jahar's hands. Surprisingly, from the intensity on Elsa's face and the way she gripped her skirts in fists, she was the one directing those flows. Maurice took a fistful of the boy's black hair and gently shook his head. "Steady, my pretty," she murmured. "Oh, steady, my lovely strong one." He smiled at her, a ravishing smile. Catswain shook her own head slightly. Understanding any sister's relationship with her warder was difficult, especially among greens, but she could not begin to fathom what passed between Maurice and her boys. Her real attention was on another boy, though. Nynaeve was swaying, groaning with the ecstasy of such an unbelievable mass of Sidar flooding through her, but Rand sat like a stone, sweat rolling down his face. His eyes were blank, like polished sapphires. Was he even aware of what was happening around him? The swallow turned on its chain beneath her hand. "There," she said, pointing toward the ruins of Shadar Logoth.
Rand could not see Nynaeve any longer. He could not see anything, feel anything. He swam in surging seas of flame, scrambled across collapsing mountains of ice. The taint flowed like an ocean tide, trying to sweep him away. If he lost control for an instant, it would strip away everything that was him and carry that down the conduit too. As bad, or maybe worse, despite the tide of filth flooding through that odd flower, the taint on the male half of the source seemed no less. It was like oil floating on water in a coating so thin you would not notice till you touched the surface, yet covering the vastness of the male half, it was an ocean in itself. He had to hold on. He had to. But for how long? How long could he hold on? If he could undo what Althor had done at the source, Dimandred thought as he stepped through his gateway into Shadar Logoth, undo it sharply and suddenly, that might well kill the man, or at least sear the ability to channel out of him. He had reasoned out what Althor's plan had to be as soon as he realized where the access key was. A brilliant scheme, he did not mind admitting, however insanely dangerous. Luz Theron had always been a brilliant planner, too, if not so brilliant as everyone made out. Not nearly as brilliant as Dimandred himself. One look at the rubble-strewn street changed his mind about altering anything, though. Beside him rose half a pale dome, its shattered top 200 feet or more above the street, and above it the sky held the light of mid-morning. From the broken rim of the ruin down to the street, though, the air was dark with shadows, as if night were already falling. The city quivered. He could feel it through his boots. Fire erupted in the forest, great explosions spun of cyadine, that hurled trees into the air on gouts of flame that sped toward him. But he was already weaving a gateway. Leaping through, he let it vanish and ran through the vine-draped trees as hard as he could, plowing through patches of snow, stumbling over rocks hidden in the mulch, but not slowing down, never that. The web had been reversed for caution's sake, but so had the first, and he had been a soldier. Still running, he heard the explosions he expected, and knew they were racing toward where his gateway had been, as surely as they had raced straight toward him among the ruins. They were far enough from him now to present no danger, though. Without slowing, he turned toward the access key. With the amount of cyadine pouring through it, there might as well have been a fiery arrow in the sky pointing to Althor. So, unless someone in this accursed age had discovered yet another unknown ability, Althor must have acquired a device, a Tirangrial, that could detect a man channeling. From what he knew of what people now called the Breaking, after he himself had been imprisoned at Shael Ghul, any woman who knew how to make Tirangrial would have been trying to create one that would do that. In war, the other side always came up with something you did not expect, and you had to counter it. He had always been good at war. First, he needed to get closer. Suddenly, he saw people off to the right ahead of him through the trees and sheltered behind a rough gray trunk. A bald-headed old man with a fringe of white hair was limping along between two women, one of them beautiful in a wild way, the other stunning. What were they doing in these woods? Who were they? Friends of Althor, or just people in the wrong place at the wrong time? He hesitated to kill them, whoever they were, Any use of the power would warn Althor. He would have to wait until they passed. The old man's head was turning as if he were searching for something among the trees, but Demandra doubted a fellow that decrepit could see very far. Abruptly, the old man stopped and thrust out his hand straight toward Demandred, and Demandred found himself frantically fending off a net of cyadine that struck his warding much harder than it should have, as hard as his own spinning wood. That tottering old man was an Ashaman, and at least one of the women must be what passed for Aes Sedai in this time, and joined with the fellow in a ring. He tried to launch his own attack and crush them, but the old man flung web after web at him without pause, and it was all he could do to fend them off. Those that struck trees enveloped them in flame or blew the trunks apart in splinters. He was a general, a great general, but generals did not have to fight alongside the men they commanded. Snarling, he began to retreat amid the crackle of burning trees and the thunder of explosions, away from the key. Sooner or later, the old man had to tire, and then he could take care of killing Althor, if one of the others did not get there first. He hoped fervently they did not.
Skirts hiked to her knees, cursing. Sindane ran from her third gateway as soon as she was through. She could hear the explosions marching toward the site, but this time she had realized why they came straight for her. Tripping on vines hidden in the snow, bumping into tree trunks, she ran. She hated forests. At least some of the others were here. She had seen those fountaining fires speed elsewhere than at her. She could feel Sidar being spun at more than one place, spun with fury. But she prayed to the Great Lord that she would reach Luz Theron first. She wanted to see him die, she realized, and for that she would have to get closer.
Crouching behind a fallen log, Osungar panted from the exertion of running. Those months masquerading as Corlan Dasheva had not made him any fonder of exercise. The explosions that had almost killed him died away, then started up again somewhere in the distance, and he cautiously raised himself enough to peek over the log. Not that he supposed a piece of wood was very much protection. He had never been a soldier, not really. His talents, his genius, lay elsewhere. The Trollocs were his making, and thus the Myrdrall, that had sprung from them, and many other creatures that had rocked the world and made his name famous. The access key blazed with cyadine, but he could feel lesser amounts being wielded, too, in various directions. He had expected others of the Chosen to be here ahead of him, had hoped they might have finished the task before he arrived, but plainly they had not. Plainly Althor had brought along some of those Ashaman, and by the amount of cyadine that had gone into the eruptions that targeted him, Kalendor as well. And maybe some of his tame so-called Aes Sedai. Crouching again, he bit his lip. This forest was a very dangerous place, more so than he had expected, and nowhere for a genius. But the fact remained that Moradin terrified him. The man had always terrified him, from the very beginning. He had been mad with power before they were sealed into the boar, and since they had been freed, he seemed to think that he was the great lord. Moradin would find out somehow if he fled, and kill him. Worse, if Althor succeeded, the Great Lord might decide to kill both of them, and Osungar as well. He did not care whether they died, but he did very much about himself. He was not good at judging time by the sun, but it was obviously still short of noon. Hauling himself from the ground, he dabbed at the dirt on his clothes, then gave up in disgust and began to skulk from tree to tree in what he imagined was a stealthy manner. It was toward the key that he skulked. Perhaps one of the others would finish the man before he got close to it, but if not, perhaps he would find the chance to be a hero. Carefully, of course.
Verin frowned at the apparition making its way through the trees off to her left. She could think of no other term for a woman walking through the forest in gems and a gown that shifted through every color from black to white and sometimes even turned transparent. She was not hurrying, but she was heading toward the hill where Rand was, and unless Verin was very much mistaken, she was one of the Forsaken.
"Are we just going to watch her?"
Shallan whispered furiously. She had been upset that she was not the one to meld the flows, as if a wilder strength counted with Aes Sedai, and hours tramping through the woods had not improved her temper.
"We must do something," Kumira said softly, and Varin nodded.
"I was just deciding what."
"A shield," she decided.
"A captive Forsaken might prove very useful."
Using the full strength of her circle, she wove her shield and watched, aghast, as it rebounded. The woman was already embracing Sidar, though no light shone around her, and she was immensely strong. Then she had no time for thought of anything, as the golden-haired woman spun around and began channeling. Varin could not see the weaves, but she knew when she was fighting off an attack on her life, and she had come too far to die here.
Eben hitched his cloak around himself and wished he were better at ignoring the cold. Simple cold he could ignore, but not the wind that had sprung up since the sun passed its zenith. The three sisters linked to him simply let the wind tick their cloaks as they tried to watch every direction at once. Daigeon was leading the circle, because of him, he thought, but she was drawing so lightly that he felt barely a whisper of Saidin passing through him. She would not want to face that until she had to. He lifted her cowl back into place on her head, and she smiled at him from its depths. The bond carried her affection to him, and his own back, he supposed. With time, he thought he might come to love this little Aes Sedai. The torrent of Saidin far behind him had a tendency to wash out his awareness of other channeling, but he could feel others wielding the power. The battle had been joined elsewhere, and so far all the four of them had done was walk. He did not mind that much, really. He had been at Dumai's Wells and fought the Seanchan, and he had learned that battles were more fun in a book than in the flesh. What did irk him was that he had not been given control of the circle. Of course, Jahar had not, but he figured Maurice amused herself by making Jahar balance a cookie on his nose. Dahmer had been given control of that circle, though. Just because the man had a few years on him, well, more than a few, he was older than Eben's Da, was no reason for Cadswain to look at him as if he were a...
"Can you help me? I seem to have lost my way and my horse."
The woman who stepped from behind a tree ahead of them did not even have a cloak. Instead, she wore a gown of deep green silk cut so low that half of her lush bosom was exposed. Waves of black hair surrounded a beautiful face, with green eyes that sparkled as she smiled.
"A strange place to be riding," Beldine said suspiciously.
The pretty green had not been pleased when Cadswain put Daigeon in charge, and she had taken every opportunity to state her opinion of Daigeon's decisions.
"I hadn't meant to ride so far," the woman said, coming closer. "I see you're all Aes Sedai, with a groom. Do you know what all the commotion is about?"
Suddenly, Eben felt the blood drain from his face. What he felt was impossible. The green-eyed woman frowned in surprise, and he did the only thing that he could.
"She's holding Saidin!"
he shouted, and threw himself at her as he felt Daigeon draw deeply on the power.
Sindane slowed at the sight of the woman standing among the trees 100 paces ahead of her, a tall, yellow-haired woman who simply watched her come closer. The feel of battles being fought with the power in other places made her wary at the same time it gave her hope. The woman was plainly dressed in wool, but incongruously decked with gems as if she were a great lady. With Sidar in her, Sindane could see the faint lines at the corners of the woman's eyes. Not one of those who called themselves Aes Sedai, then. But who? And why did she stand there as if she would bar Sindane's way? It did not really matter. Channeling now would give her away, but she had time. The key still shone as a beacon of the power. Luz Theron still lived. No matter how fierce the other woman's eyes, a knife would do for her if she really thought she could be a bar. And just in case she proved to be what they called a wilder, Sindane prepared a small present for her, a reversed web she would not even see until it was too late. Abruptly, the light of Sidar appeared around the woman, but the ready ball of fire streaked from Sindane's hand, small enough to escape detection, she hoped, but enough to burn a hole through this woman who... Just as it reached the woman, almost close enough to singe her garments, the web of fire unraveled. The woman did not do anything. The net simply came apart.
Sindane had never heard of a Turangreal that would break a web, but it must be that. Then the woman struck back at her, and she suffered her second shock. She was stronger than Sindane had been before the Aelfin and the Eelfin held her. That was impossible. No woman could be stronger. She must have an Angreal, too. Shock lasted only the time it took her to slice the other woman's flows. She did not know how to reverse them. Maybe that would be enough advantage. She would see Luz Theron die. The taller woman jerked as her cut flows snapped back into her, but even as she shifted her feet with the blow, she channeled again. Snarling, Sindane fought back, and the earth heaved beneath their feet. She would see him die! She would! The high hilltop was not very near to the access key, but even so, the key shone so brightly in Mogadine's head that she hungered for just a sip at that immense flow of Sidar. To hold so much, the thousandth part of so much, would be ecstasy. She hungered, but this wood advantage was as near as she intended going. Only the threat of Moradin's hands caressing her cour souvre had driven her to travel here at all, and she had delayed coming, prayed that it would be over before she was forced to. Always she had worked in secrecy, but she had had to flee an attack as soon as she arrived, and in widely separated places in the forest spread out before her, lightnings and fires woven of Sidar and others that must have been Sidine flashed and flared beneath the mid-afternoon sun. Black smoke rose in plumes from burning clumps of trees, and thunderous explosions rolled through the air. Who fought, who lived, who died were all matters of indifference to her, except that it would be pleasant if Sindane or Grendal perished, or both. Mogadine would not thrashing about in the middle of a battle. And if that were not bad enough, there was what stood beyond the shining key, an immense flattened dome of black in the forest, as though night had turned to stone. She flinched as a ripple passed across the dark surface and the dome heaved perceptibly higher. Madness to go any closer to that, whatever it was. Moradin would not know what she did here, or did not do. Retreating to the back of the hilltop, away from the shining key and the strange dome, she sat down to do what she had done so often in the past. Watch from the shadows and survive.
Inside his head, Rand was screaming. He was sure that he was screaming, that Luz Theron was screaming. But he could not hear either voice in the roar. The foul ocean of the taint was flooding through him, howling with its speed. Tidal waves of vileness crashed over him. Raging gales of filth ripped at him. The only reason he knew that he still held the power was the taint. Sidine could be shifting, flaring, about to kill him, and he would never know. That putrid flood overwhelmed everything else, and he hung on by his fingernails to keep from being swept away on it. The taint was moving. That was all that counted now. He had to hold on.
"What can you tell me, Min?" Cadswain kept her feet despite her weariness. Holding that shield through most of a day was enough to tire anyone. There had not been an attack on the hilltop for some time, and in fact it seemed the only active channeling she could sense was what Nynaeve and the boy were doing. Elza was pacing an endless circle around the crest of the hill, still linked to Maurice and Jahar, but there was nothing for her to do at the moment except scan the hills around them. Jahar was sitting on a stone with Kalandor shining faintly in the crook of his arm. Maurice sat on the ground beside him with her head on his knee, and he was stroking her hair. "Well, Min?" Cadswain demanded. The girl looked up angrily from the depression in the stony ground where Tomas and Moad had bundled her and Harina. At least the men had sense enough to accept that they could not fight any part of this fight. Harina wore a sullen scowl, and more than once it had been necessary for one of the men to restrain Min from going to young Althor. They had actually had to take her knives away after she tried to use the blades on them. "I know he's alive," the girl muttered, "and I think he's hurting. Only if I can feel enough to think he's hurting, then he's in agony. Let me go to him." "You would only get in the way now." Ignoring the girl's frustrated groan, Cadswain walked across the uneven ground to where Rand and Nynaeve sat, but for a moment she did not look at them. Even at a distance of miles, the black dome looked immense, rearing 1,000 feet at its height. And it was swelling. The surface looked like black steel, though it did not sparkle in the afternoon sun. If anything, the light seemed to dim around it. Rand was sitting as he had since the beginning, an unmoving, unseeing statue with sweat rolling down his face. If he was in agony, as Min said, he showed no sign of it. And if he was, Cadswain did not know what she could do, what she dared to do. Disturbing him now in any way might have dire consequences. Glancing at that rising, dead-black dome, Cadswain grunted. Having let him begin in the first place might have dire consequences, too. With a moan, Nynaeve slipped from her stone seat to the ground. Her dress was sodden with sweat, and strands of hair clung to her slick face. Her eyelids fluttered weakly, and her breasts heaved as she gulped air desperately. "No more," she whimpered. "I cannot stand any more." Cadswain hesitated, something she was not accustomed to doing. The girl could not leave the circle until young Althor released her, but unless these Choadon Kal were flawed in the same way as Kalendor, she would be buffered against taking in enough of the power to damage her. Except that she was acting as a conduit for far more of Sidar than the entire White Tower could have handled, using every Angreal and Sa'angreal the tower possessed. After having that flow through her for hours, simple physical exhaustion might be killing her. Kneeling beside the girl, Cadswain laid the swallow on the ground beside her, took the girl's head in her hands, and lessened the amount of Sidar she was putting into the shield. Her abilities with healing were no more than average, but she could wash away some of the girl's exhaustion at least without falling over herself. She was very conscious of the weakened shield over them, though, and she wasted no time in forming the weaves.
Scrambling to the top of the hill, Osengard dropped to the ground on his belly and smiled as he crabbed sideways to shelter behind a tree. From here, with Saidin in him, he could see the next crest clearly, and the people on it. Not as many as he had expected. One woman was making a slow circuit around the crest, peering into the trees, but everyone else was still. Narishma, sitting with Kalendor glowing in his hands, and a woman's head on his knee. There were two other women that Osengard could see, one kneeling over the other, but they were obscured by a man's back. He did not need to see the man's face to know Althor. The key, lying on the ground at his side, named him. To Osengard's eyes it shone brightly. In his head it overwhelmed the sun, 1,000 suns. What he could do with that? A pity it had to be destroyed along with Althor. But still, he could take Kalendor after Althor was dead. No one else among the Chosen possessed so much as an Angreal. Even Moradin would quail before him once he had that crystal sword. Nablis? Osengard would be named Nablis after he destroyed Althor and undid all that he had done here. Laughing softly, he wove Balefire. Who would ever have thought that he would turn out to be the hero of the day?
Walking slowly, studying the forested hills around them, Elza suddenly stopped as a flicker of movement caught the corner of her eye. She turned her head slowly, and not as far as the hill where she had seen that flash. The day had been very difficult for her. In her captivity among the Aiel tents at Cairhien, it had come to her that it was paramount for the Dragon Reborn to reach the last battle. It had suddenly become so blindingly obvious that it astounded her she had not seen it before. Now it was clear to her, as clear as Sidar made the face of the man trying to hide on that hill while peeking around a tree trunk. Today she had been forced to fight the Chosen. Surely the Great Lord would understand if she had actually killed any of them, but Corlan Dashiva was only one of those Ashaman. Dashiva raised his hand toward the hill where she stood, and she drew as hard as she could on Kalendor and Jahar's hands. Saidin seemed well suited to destruction to her. A huge ball of coruscating fire surrounded the other hilltop, red and gold and blue. When it was gone, that other hill ended in a smooth surface, 50 feet lower than the old crest. Mogadin was not sure why she had remained this long. There could not be more than 2 hours of daylight left, and the forest was quiet. Except for the key, she could not feel Sidar being channeled anywhere. That was not to say that someone was not using small amounts somewhere, but nothing like the fury that had raged earlier. The battle was over, the other chosen dead or flying in defeat. Plainly defeat, since the key still blazed in her head. Amazing that the Choadon Kal had survived continuous use for this long, at this level. Lying on her belly atop her high vantage point with her chin in her hands, she was watching the great dome. Black no longer seemed to describe it. There was no term for it now, but black was a pale color by comparison. It was half a ball now, rearing like a mountain 2 miles or more into the sky. A thick layer of shadow lay around it, as though it were sucking the last light out of the air. She could not understand why she was not afraid. That thing might grow until it enveloped the entire world, or perhaps shatter the world, as Arangar had said it might. But if that happened, there was no safe place, no shadows for the spider to hide in. Suddenly something writhed up from that dark, smooth surface, like a flame, if flames were blacker than black, then another, another, until the dome boiled with Stygian fire. The roar of 10,000 thunders made her clap her hands over her ears and shriek, soundlessly in that crash, and the dome collapsed in on itself in the space of a heartbeat, to a pinpoint, to nothing. It was wind that howled then, rushing toward the vanished dome, dragging her along the stony ground, no matter how desperately she clawed for purchase, tumbling her against trees, lifting her into the air. Strangely, she still felt no fear. She thought if she survived this, she would never feel fear again. Cadswain let the thing that had been a Turangreal drop to the ground. It could no longer be called a statue of a woman. The face was as wisely serene as ever, but the figure was broken in two and lumpy like bubbled wax where one side had melted, including the arm that had held the crystal sphere, now lying in shattered fragments around the ruined thing. The male figure was whole and already tucked away in her saddlebags. Kalandor was secured, too. It was best not to leave temptation on the open hilltop. Where Shadar Logoth had been, there was now a huge opening in the forest, perfectly round, and so wide that even with the sun low on the horizon, she could see the far side sloping down into the earth. Lan, leading his limping warhorse up the slope, dropped the black stallion's reins when he saw Nynaeve stretched out on the ground and covered to her chin with her cloak. Young Althor lay at her side, also blanketed in his cloak, with Min curled up against him, her head on his chest. Her eyes were closed, but by her small smile she was not asleep. Lan barely spared them a glance as he ran the last distance and fell on his knees to raise Nynaeve's head gently on his arm. She did not stir any more than the boy. "They are just unconscious," Cadswain told him. "Coriel says it is better to let them recover on their own." And how long that might require, Coriel had not been prepared to say. Nor had Dahmer. The wounds in the boy's side were unchanged, though Dahmer had expected they would be. It was all very disturbing. A little farther up the hill, the bald Ashaman was bent over a groaning Beldine, his fingers writhing just above her as he wove his strange healing. He had been busy the last hour. Olivia could not stop staring in wonder and flexing the arm that had been broken, as well as seared to the bone. Serene walked unsteadily, but that was just tiredness. She'd almost died out there in the forest, and her eyes were still wide with the experience. Whites were not used to that sort of thing. Not everyone had been so lucky. Verin and the seafolk woman were sitting beside the cloak-covered form of Kumira, their lips moving silently in prayers for her soul, and Nasuna was trying awkwardly to comfort a weeping Daigyan who cradled young Eben's corpse in her arms and rocked him like a baby. Greens were used to that sort of thing, but Cadswain did not like losing two of her people in return for no more than a few singed Forsaken and one dead renegade. "It's clean," Jahar said softly yet again. This time Maurice was the one sitting, with his head resting in her lap. Her blue eyes were as stern as ever, but she stroked his black hair gently. "It's clean." Cadswain exchanged looks with Maurice over the boy's head. Dahmer and Jahar both said the same thing. The taint was gone, but how could they be sure some scrap did not remain? Maurice had allowed her to link with the boy, and she could not feel anything like what the other green had described, yet how could they be certain? Sidene was so alien that anything could be hidden in that mad chaos. "I want to leave as soon as the rest of the warders return," she announced. There were too many questions for which she had no answers to suit her, but she had young Al Thor now, and she did not intend to lose him. Night fell. On the hilltop, the wind blew dust across the fragments of what had once been a Turan Greal. Below lay the tomb of Shadar Logoth, open to give the world hope. And on distant Tremalking, the word began to spread that the time of illusions was at an end. The end of the ninth book of The Wheel of Time.